History in Five Songs with host Martin Popoff. A production of Pantheon Podcasts. Let's rock out with Martin.
Yes, indeed. Welcome back again to another episode of History in Five Songs with Martin Popoff, brought to you by the good people at Pantheon Podcast. Pleased, as always, to be part of this vast and always expanding Pantheon Podcast Network. Expanding, of course, with our own Kicked in the Teeth podcast that I do with John Gaffney. This is an AC/DC podcast. We've got two episodes going now. We've got the next one planned. So check us out here on this platform. But yes, this is episode 250. I'm calling this their Future in One Song. Yes, episode 250. We have a special episode for you. No, we don't. It's just a regular episode. Maybe on the five-year anniversary, I can come up with something special, but probably not. That would be like, what, 52 weeks times five, right? So that's coming up fairly soon as well. Anyways, yes, their Future in One Song. So the idea here, I've kind of had this one rolling around for a little while, and I'll explain a little more when we get to the second category. But the idea here is, when does a band discover their future song, or, I mean their future sound, on one album? And then maybe it's just there in one song or a couple of songs, but you imagine them going, boy, we kind of like that idea. That was cool. That was a successful experiment. It might not have been a hit single or anything, but hey, let's do more of that. And then you get more of that moving forward kind of thing. So yeah, the idea is, you know, we've talked about all these situations where a band arrives fully formed. We've talked about situations where a band has a huge up ratchet in quality and vision and focus on the second album. But this is more like at any point moving along, something, you know, you get the first song of a band's future sound. And the other reason this, you know, how I always say that a good episode is when there's not a lot of examples of something, or you go through many, many bands and you just get no. And if you look at my notes, that's kind of what this is full of here. So yeah, it's interesting that this is actually rare. This doesn't happen with every single band. Of course, with any idea that we do here, or Contrarians, or Sea of Tranquility, or when we go on with the Guitar Hack, or whatever, any of these ideas that we do on these shows, you know, you could come up with an idea and then just you know, hammer stuff into that, put it in a headlock and force the idea and say, well, everybody has one kind of thing. And it kind of drives us nuts when we see that in the comments. It's like, we came up with this idea and now you're just saying every band applies in some way or another. So no, I don't really feel that's the point with this. So let's get into it. We've got a couple different contours here, and of course our different categories. Take a listen to our first selection here. This is by a band very specifically called Ted Nugent's Amboy Dukes, and the song is Living in the Woods. Right, so Ted Nugent's Amboy Dukes. So this is not the Amboy Dukes. It's not Ted Nugent ampersand the Amboy Dukes, or AND the Amboy Dukes, or anything like that. This is off of Tooth, Fang, and Claw. So this is the second of the two albums on Discreet, on you know, that brown label. And they go as a pair. So the first one is 1973's Call of the Wild. This is 1974, Tooth, Fang, and Claw. And I do believe that on this song, Living in the Woods, we get, you know, the origin story of the sound that we're going to hear, essentially more so than anywhere else. Well, actually, let me change that a little. I mean, on the Ted Nugent debut from 1975, but I feel like this song is a little bit of a Weekend Warriors song as well. I want to thank William Walker for some suggestions here, and I'm going to actually disagree with some of his choices on this, but at least got me thinking about that band and coming up with a choice that I thought was better. And case in point here, he writes, Call of the Wild, other songs from the Amboy Dukes album could be picked. So he meant Call of the Wild. But this is the best song from the album, and as opposed to the rest of the depressing, psychedelic Amboy Dukes catalog. So he makes a good point there, which I'll get to in a second. This album shows Nugent's gradual turn to hard rock that was more succinctly released in his early solo career. So, yeah, basically all of us as kids and most Ted Nugent fans that I know, you know, they do think of Call of the Wild and Tooth, Fang, and Claw as the starter kit towards the magnificent 1975 Ted Nugent debut. You know, and I also want to say that on Tooth, Fang, and Claw, the first track, Lady Luck, also feels like it's pointing in this direction. And there's a specific chord change that sounds a little bit like, you know, Ted Nugent has his own version of the Tony Iommi Geronimo riff. And I think you hear it more so in some of his chord changes. And here, I think you get that on Lady Luck. But I think Living in the Woods is just closer to it. You've got Ted singing, and we know Ted sings, you know, a fair bit. We got Derek St. Holmes as well. I'm in the minority. I think I love Ted singing in the old days, in the new days. I think he's just a great singer. But a lot of people complain about his singing. But yeah, so he's singing as well, so that's part of it as well. And just to go through a couple more here in this, I call this category, loosely speaking, general classic rock. So Aerosmith, no. I don't think they have this. I went through, this took a lot of work working on this episode, you know, but I went, you know, there's nothing on Aerosmith that points the way, the 73 album. And I think, so here's the thing with this concept, and Aerosmith is a good example of this. With this concept, if the future sound is too complicated and varied and all over the place, it generally doesn't apply that it fits into, this theme. So Aerosmith is a bit like that, because when you get Your Wings, everything is improved. It's a much, much better album, but it's a whole bunch of different ideas that are still, you know, soberly part of this America's Rolling Stones kind of thing. It's fairly heavy. It sounds like Ted Nugent, sounds like Kiss, right? But better than Kiss, a more sort of sophisticated sound. But you can't pick out any one song and say this is the Aerosmith song, because everything changes once again for Toys, and it changes again for rock. So yeah, a lot of bands, there is a big no on this concept of their future in one song. Cheap Trick was a funny case. So I went through all the Cheap Trick albums early on, and I could not dwell and sit and pick anything off the debut or In Color. It took me all the way to Surrender, which is a weird choice, right? I mean, this is by and far their most famous song. But then I thought, okay, well, this kind of is the Cheap Trick sound. I'm just trying not to psych myself out and say it's because it's Surrender. But then I realized, you know, On Top of the World, California Man, and even Taking Me Back, I feel like you get there a little more. And some of this has to do with the sort of more mid-rangey and noisy production that Tom Werman gets after In Color. So I went through the In Color songs and thought, okay, there's songs here that feel like the Cheap Trick sound. But they're recorded too well. That's kind of the thing that went on there. Led Zeppelin, no. It's just too varied. You can't pick one thing, so you can't pick something off of the debut and say this is pointing the way forward. You know, you can pick something like Communication Breakdown for the way forward for heavy metal. And, you know, you could probably land on something on Led Zeppelin 2 and say this was a big increase in professionalism. But no, there's no one thing they do, I don't think, on any of these albums that point their way forward. Queen is a funny one. William Walker says, Modern Times Rock and Roll, a total precursor to Stone Cold Crazy and Sheer Heart Attack and Proto Thrash songs. To me, that just makes it an outlier. It's an outlier in Queen. And, you know, I was looking for the sound forward for Queen. Now, so my choice has always been, this has just always been sitting in my mind. You know, I've said, I think Bohemian Rhapsody is the greatest song ever written, right? Killer Queen to me feels like, and I almost did a whole episode on this idea of summery songs, the album in one song. Did I? Yeah, I don't think I did this episode, because it's one I've been mulling around recently. So the idea of a summary song or the album in one song is kind of like somewhat everything but the kitchen sink, but more like many of the tricks of your trade you've stuck into this one song. Now, Killer Queen isn't exactly that because it doesn't have, you know, a preponderance of heaviness to it. But I feel like Killer Queen is a little bit of a summary song towards Bohemian Rhapsody. And I think it's adequate enough that it points to the future of Queen. So it's got the, the 1920s, the 1930s kind of, what did we call that again? Dance hall music sound. But it also has, it has that throughput to Bohemian Rhapsody. It also has the throughput to the idea of Queen writing a lot of novelty songs, right? You've seen our, you've heard our novelty episode before, and we definitely talked about Queen there. So yeah, Queen, I'm gonna go with Killer Queen. And I even went through the first couple of albums and said, there's just too much variety here, too much eccentricity. I just feel like they kind of wrap enough things in a bow because they have such a complex future sound that Killer Queen works. Thin Lizzy is an interesting one. I went through, so you would never say anything from the first two albums. Vagabonds is still the Eric Bell era. And even on Nightlife, there really isn't a proper twin lead song. But there's some heaviness there. You know, William Walker talks about Sha-La-La foreshadowing their heavier direction, but I think it's just too heavy isn't what I would say is the main thing about Thin Lizzy. So I went to Wild One on Fighting. I feel like it's fine that it's a ballad, because that's okay. They did a lot of that sort of stuff, but it's an up-tempo one, so it's like a pop song, I suppose. But it definitely has the twin lead. It definitely has the Phil Lynott lyric and vocal. So I think Wild One is the first time where you really get this. And when you talk to Scott Gorham, he will talk about how, they kind of found that twin lead song more or less on the Fighting album. So it takes them a long time to find their sound. So I think they do find their sound on that one. And I think the Freedom song on that album needs to be pointed out as well, because that even sounds like a dry run towards The Boys Are Back in Town. So I really like that idea that you get, the hanging chords. It just feels like a laid back version of Boys Are Back in Town. And they do that a lot throughout the catalog as well. So this is a band with a complex future. But I think, let's give them two songs. I think in Wild One and the Freedom song, you definitely get the distillation, amalgamation, whatever you want to call it, of the Thin Lizzy song. The Who is a funny one. I feel like you get their sound really for the first time with Bob O'Reilly, Bargain, Won't Get Fooled Again. So up into the Who's Next era, that has a lot to do with Pete Townshend as a piercing rhythm lick player, clean guitar sound, and lots of busy drums. I just kind of feel you could get through, and I went and played. I touched down on many of the tracks again to remind myself, Tommy. And then the early days is the early days, so I don't think you really get it there as well. So, yeah, the Who, the sound we identify with the Who. And again, when you get this future sound, and the Who is a perfect case of this, when you take the sum, median, mean average of Bob O'Reilly, Bargain, and Won't Get Fooled Again, you do definitely hear a lot of that on Quadrophenia, maybe a little less on Who by Numbers, but it's back for Who Are You. It's gone in the Kenny Jones era, but essentially that one sound, if you could say it, that one sound that we associate with the Who, I think starts there. ZZ Top, I couldn't pick anything. I just feel they so here's the other thing that happens with these bands. They gradually come into it across all the songs, so it doesn't feel like one song is pointing the way forward. You might pick something with a little bit more of a non-blues over into heavy metal riff, but I don't know. I don't think there's anything. And again, they do a lot of different things over their career. It just doesn't feel like there's anything there. Okay, let's take a short break. We'll be right back.
Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here. Another day, another podcast I'm working on. This time, it's Famous and Gravy with Amit and Michael. I want to let you know that I loved the Factor Meals package so much that I re-upped for myself, and then I sent a package to my in-laws. Like I was with my first shipment from Factor Meals, the in-laws were as excited to try one of the prepared restaurant-quality meals. Well, they got the shipment of Protein Plus Meal Plan and were very impressed. See, being in their 80s, anything to make the meal prep easy is a plus for them. They heated the oven per instructions and minutes later were enjoying a very delicious, nutritious, and dietitian-approved meal. One big win for me. But what really floored them was the taste. Like I told you, it's surprising how good these meals taste. Restaurant quality indeed. And like my own shipment, it really was everything Factor Meals said it would be for some seniors. No prep, no mess meals. Factor Meals are 100% ready to heat and eat. Take it from me and my in-laws. Head to factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. That's factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. Thank you, Factor Meals.
All right, back again here, History in Five Songs with Martin Popoff, episode 250, Their Future in One Song. Let's take a listen to our second selection here, and we shall discuss. This is the Rolling Stones with If You Can't Rock Me. Hey, yeah. The drummer thinks that he is okay, so I almost thought about doing, this whole episode is actually inspired and dedicated to the Stones. I thought of doing a whole episode on the Stones. I remember having this discussion, and you know, I've mentioned this a little bit in a previous episode. Which one did we talk about this? Well, yeah, 234, They Shrunk the Boogie, right? Because Rolling Stones is a great example of a band that shrunk their boogie. When they shrink their boogie, they get their sound. That's the way I look at it. So I went through a whole bunch of the albums. The Early Days is the Early Days. Beggar's Banquet is a little intimate. You know, maybe Stray Cat Blues, you're starting to get their sound. I'll explain their sound in a minute when we get there. Really nothing on Let It Bleed. You might look at Brown Sugar a little bit. On Exile, on Main Street, Rocks Off, Happy, a little bit, you get their sound. But I feel like the early version of the Rock and Rolling Stones, They're still kind of expansive. They fill out their sound. They're trying harder. It's like Van Halen 1 versus the next three albums, where Van Halen lets their hair down on a production. They become more spontaneous. I feel like the Stones do that as well. So I think they're trying harder on these early albums. And when they make a heavy song, it just sounds, it's not really their sound yet. It's their sound and a producer kind of thing. So I feel like Goat's Head Soup has nothing whatsoever. So I went with If You Can't Rock Me from It's Only Rock and Roll. So the idea here, so we're all the way up into 1974, which you might find kind of surprising. What their sound is, I think, is when the drums get small and trapsy, the guitar riffing, the weave, whoever Keith's doing it with, it's getting a little stumbly and druggy and drunky, and you just get the smaller, more intimate hard rock vibe. So their sound, I think, is the rock sound, even though they do lots of different things. Man, going through these albums, I swear. If someone said, here's $100, you know, I've said this one before, this is a whole long story, but if someone said, here's $100,000, you can listen to one band for the rest of your life, I could definitely pick the Stones. I just love this band. I play all this stuff and go, man, why don't I spend way more time listening to the Stones? Anyways, so I think you get their sound there. And the interesting thing that happens with the Stones is that on Black and Blue, nothing. Their sound is not on any of those songs. And then once you get up into Some Girls, you really start seeing it in a very focused and shorter song length way. So you've got things like When the Whip Comes Down, Lies, and Respectable, all absolutely, this is the Rolling Stones sound. Emotional Rescue has Summer Romance and She's So Cold. So if you want to know what I think the Rolling Stones sound is, you can literally go to those five songs from 78 and 79, and that's what I mean. And then you get it on and off throughout the later albums. Of course, the productions start getting, again, more expansive as time goes on. But this is what I really feel is their sound. So, yeah, I feel like the Rolling Stones sound is most prevalent on those albums and Tattoo You, basically. Those three albums in a row. So there you go. Okay, so let's move on to our third selection here. Take a listen to this. This is Rush with Anthem. All right. So the category here is prog, and it's interesting. I really felt like I couldn't find one of these for a lot of different prog bands. So for Rush, William Walker had mentioned, and quite rightly, you could have picked this. I picked Anthem, obviously, but he says, Bytor and the Snow Dog, Rush's first delve into super adventurous, complex heavy metal that is also lengthy as well. That's right. Anthem is not lengthy, but I think it's doing the thing. So I think... with Anthem, you get the invention of progressive metal. Neil's here, so you get Neil's lyrics. It's complicated. The drumming is complicated as well, but the whole song is. It's the first song on this album, so I guess chronologically, if we're gonna go with what was my title again? Their Future in One Song. You know, the future starts with Anthem, and it will continue with William Walker's choice, Bytor and the Snow Dog, which is the obvious other excellent choice on this album, because this album still has vestiges of the debut on, and the debut, of course, really has nothing that would fit this. So I think that's their future in one song. You know, he also mentioned Subdivisions. I don't really buy that. You know, the idea, we've done a whole episode on keyboards, by the way, of course, and you know, there is this sort of, is this the start of the keyboards, but the keyboards kind of starts gradually elsewhere as well, and I don't feel, it doesn't feel like a typical Rush keyboardy song, so I really felt like the strong thing is you want to find the invention of progressive metal, because that's why Rush was so famous. They were basically alone doing this one genre, right? Genesis, I think Your Own Special Way on Wind and Wuthering, 76, but then Follow You, Follow Me on, and then there were 378. So I think you get the start of, you know, you can say it's ballad Genesis, it's mellow Genesis, it's songs of a reasonable length Genesis, it's Genesis without too many parts. But I think what happens is you get the start of using very maudlin pop chords. I think your ears prick up to that as much as it pricks up to any of these other more material things. So I think that's the start of that sort of Genesis. And then interestingly enough, I almost feel like Man on the Corner on Abacab 1981 is the start of the Genesis that people compare, how there's this narrative running through the rest of the Genesis albums of the idea of songs that sound somewhat like Phil's solo career. So I think that's the start of that kind of idea. I really feel like the start of a you know, pop and then the super popular Genesis is Your Own Special Way and Wind and Weathering. Pink Floyd, you know, maybe Burning Bridges from Obscured by Clouds, but I really feel like Echoes and One of These Days on Metal is when you really start to get it, because before they compartmentalized their ideas into various plays. It didn't feel like the melange, but still the tight melange that you got on Dark Side of the Moon. And I feel like you know, definitely Echoes with a lot of ideas as well, and One of These Days and being a super long song. So somewhat conceptual that way, is it for Pink Floyd? Yes, I could not really ascertain. You can let me know in the Facebook page if you think there's something on Yes or Time in a Word that feels like it, but I feel like they kind of sidle their way into it anyways. I couldn't find one song where they say, oh, we're a progressive rock band. We're starting this whole new thing. So I couldn't feel it with Yes, and I couldn't feel it really with Jethro Tull either. There's, again, it was gradual, it was complex, the songs were short already, and they already had a lot of ideas. So, you know, famously, people say this is their Blues Boom album, and then they move into the real Jethro Tull on Stand Up and Benefit. But I went carefully through Stand Up and Benefit, 69 and 70, couldn't find one song definitively, because we know Jethro Tull does a variety of things, even with their key Jethro Tull sound in the rest of the 70s, but even in the later end of the 70s, we know they become an even more folky version of Jethro Tull, and then keyboards come in more so they get a little futuristic. So, yeah, I couldn't find one. Let me know on the Facebook page if you think there is one there. All right, let's move on to our fourth category here. This is basically metal. Scorpions, Entrance.
I see your face and I see myself and I get it. I tried to stand it for a while, but I'm in a trance. Hey baby, tell me, can't you hear me calling? I'm in a trance.
All right, so I love this choice by William Walker. This was his idea, and I thought it was a perfect idea, because, as he says, it foreshadows the light and shade heavy metal power ballad Scorpions would become famous for 10 years later, something they kept doing through all of their classic albums. You know, I generally, my go-to would have been Speedy's Coming off Fly to the Rainbow, because I feel like that's their first modern metal song. So if you want to say Scorpions sound is modern metal, I think you get that with Speedy's Coming. I think you even get kind of a Matthias Jabs vibe, versus an Uli John Roth vibe with Speedy's Coming. So I thought that's kind of an interesting choice. But I love his choice of Entrance because, you know, the whole No One Like You and all that and Give Me All I Need, I think goes that way as well. But this idea of the absolutely quiet verse, but still the electric guitars on, not acoustic, and then the big heavy chorus, and that is illustrated perfectly by Entrance. So that's a great choice. Except, no, couldn't find one for Except. I just feel like the first album is the drunk version of Breaker, and then the second album's a departure, right? AC/DC, I feel like you're kind of getting that on Stick Around, right on the debut on High Voltage. You might get that on She's Got Balls. Check out our first episode of Kicked in the Teeth. The entire episode is a good hour or whatever on the debut Australian High Voltage, and we go through this in detail. But yeah, I feel like you get their sound with Stick Around and She's Got Balls. Black Sabbath, no. Blue Oyster Cult, no. Deep Purple, kind of an interesting story with Deep Purple. I feel like what's going on here from Byrne predicts the rest of Deep Purple with Stormbringer and Come Taste the Band. So that's kind of interesting. And I think it also predicts Whitesnake. So I think you get Whitesnake out of that as well. An interesting one, I feel, is Iron Maiden. I don't feel like anything off of the first two albums captures their future sound quite so well. And I feel like most of the Number of the Beast is kind of all over the place, where they're still admirably doing very different things. Like every song has kind of different ideas to it. I think Hallowed Be Thy Name is the first time you get a song where you go, they've done 30 Hallowed Be Thy Names moving forward. You don't feel that way about most of their other things. So you get the twin lead. You know, obviously it's Bruce, so now you've got the lead singer that's on everything moving forward, other than the two Blazes. But yeah, Hallowed Be Thy Name, I think, is the discovery of the Iron Maiden sound. Motorhead, I went through the first Motorhead, and I just really couldn't shove anything into this box. Judas Priest is a funny one. I've always said this, I've always had this thought, that I think Cheater on Rock-A-Rolla is essentially the only song on that album that could have fit on Sad Wings. I feel like, other than the, you know, the lyric is a little bit pedestrian, but I feel like musically it just feels like one of those Sad Wings songs. So I think it's the most modern sounding thing on Rock-A-Rolla. William Walker mentions Witch Doctor Woman on the first Nazareth album. He's kind of right about that. You know, as he says, the only real Ram and Slam track on the debut is just folky, bluesy, psychedelic album. Yeah, I mean, it's true. It's a heavy song. song, and the rest of the album is lighter, and then all of Exercises is lighter. So this is them essentially doing a song that you could have parachuted in onto Razzmatazz or Loud and Proud. Hair of the Dog. You know, he mentions Quartz Mainline Riders, and that's one I always thought. The funny thing about this one is it does kind of predict the future of Quartz. It's the only song that could have been on Stand Up and Fight. But then Quartz changes their sound for one last album, and then they reunite later. So they're kind of like all over the place. But definitely, it's the one super, super impressive song. But this episode isn't exactly about the most super, super impressive song. It's about the one that predicts the future, right? Richie Blackmore's Rainbow is kind of a funny one. I feel like, you know, it's a little obvious, but I would say Man on the Silver Mountain does predict Rising and Long Live Rock and Roll, I suppose. But you know, to mix things up a little, does Stormbringer on Stormbringer predict Rainbow, right? Stormbringer sounds like the first Rainbow song. So you could imagine Ronnie doing that. AI should take up some of these. These are the things I want to see AI do, right? But anyway, Stormbringer feels like almost like the first Rainbow sound. But yeah, so that fits in there as well. You know, I went through Saxon. I believe William Walker brought up Saxon, and I think this might be his choice. Stallions of the Highway, and I feel like I played that record again, and I feel like the whole second side essentially predicts, the next handful of albums. Really, only the next three, I would say. But yeah, Stallions of the Highway fits. It's up-tempo. It's about bikers, all that kind of thing. And Uriah Heep Gypsy is a funny one. William mentioned this. I would have thought of this one as well and agreed with him. The funny thing about Gypsy, I've always felt, is it just feels like the song on that album that is most indicative of the sound that they would have two albums later on. Look at Yourself, certainly, mostly, but also on Demons and Wizards and Magician's Birthday and Sweet Freedom. So Gypsy's a funny one. It's just got that big mind meld between the guitars and the Hammond that feels like they've discovered their future sound. So the funny thing is with this one, they've discovered their future sound, but then they kind of put it aside for most of the rest of the album, and then they put it aside for all of Salisbury, I would say. Maybe a little Bird of Prey in there. But then it finally comes back on the next album, so kind of interesting. All right, let's move into our fifth selection here. Take a listen to this. This is The Saints with Memories Are Made of This. You ask me why I have it. Okay, so the category is punk. I swear to God, I went through this album and I couldn't stop playing it. This might be, I really should start throwing this Saints album, Eternally Yours, the second Saints album from 1978, in my top five albums of all time. I just love this record to death. And this was really almost my most satisfying pick out of all these, because I love how, and I remember this clearly, how crestfallen and disappointed I was with Prehistoric Sounds, because this is a good heavy rock and Saints album, right? And then they abandoned this completely. But the interesting thing is Memories Are Made of This, which you just heard with those beautiful, you know, roiling acoustic guitars, and a minor aversion on this album as well, are perfectly sound like Prehistoric Sounds songs. And now I love Prehistoric Sounds. I think it's great. And I love even when they went more Celtic after that sort of thing, right? But yeah, kind of interesting. This is an absolutely perfect fit to this category. The idea that they are still the rock and punky Saints. It's much more cleaned up and riffy than the debut, which is an amazing album as well. But it's got these two songs on here that you could have just parachuted right into Prehistoric Sounds and nothing else. So this is a band that really surprised us with their sound, but they discovered the sound. This is their future in one song, in two songs actually, on Eternally Yours. Go play that album, man. That is such a great album. you know, in this category of punk, I really didn't feel like there were too many other examples. The Clash, no way. They're just all over the place all the time. Same with The Damned. I feel like there wasn't anything there. The Dead Boys only lasted two albums. Couldn't find anything there. The Ramones are doing the Ramones thing right away all over the first album. So the only other one I felt really applied, X, I don't feel it really applies to either, is the Boomtown Rats with Joey's on the Streets again. You know, if you pick the poppiest thing off of the pretty rockin' debut, you could say that that's pointing to the future. So Mick Phelan also, you know, I had asked him this question as well, and he came up with one good example that I think we're into the honorable mentions here. From Revolver 66, Tomorrow Never Knows, the Beatles. So just bringing in that use of that more sophistication, as he says, shows a new stylistic technique way, way ahead of its time. The mantra drum beat, the mantra phrasings, very dance music-ish, not just suggesting things that they would do, but also things that would happen in music, full stop. So that's pretty cool. Thanks for that, Mick. And that's it. You know, William mentioned a few other examples, but, you know, we are really out of time. I have really babbled on with this one, and I don't really agree with most of his other examples. So I don't like, I'll point out a couple here that he mentioned. Love Ain't No Stranger, he says, foreshadows Whitesnake's power ballad formula. Yeah, I kind of like that. Although, you know, it once it picks up, it's not really that anymore, but it starts that way, and you can hear that future sound in that. So that's kind of cool. Bringing on the Heartache, Heartbreak, Def Leppard, yeah, kind of, because they do a fair bit of that later on, so you could say, but it's not like they you know, settled on that. That was just like, hey, this is our first one of that. So maybe not particularly. He mentions Dark Avenger foreshadowing Manowar's move away from Saxon-esque biker metal towards sword and sorcery-centric power metal. Sure. So, you know, he mentioned Wigwam Bam from Sweet. Sweet is a funny one as well, because they went in a few different directions, and they had the more highly technical heavy metal stuff, and then they had the more chordal stuff. And interestingly enough, Chapman Chin could do both. You know, so he mentions Wigwam Bam. I don't know if I'd particularly go with that. But yeah, they did kind of move from a poppier thing into a heavier thing. So you could almost make the point there. So there you go. If you like this show and want to support future episodes, go to ko-fi.com/MartinPopoff. Hit that red support button. And buy me a coffee or a pint. This week, I would like to thank David Barsky, Andy at Black Sugar Transmission, just back from a KMFDM tour. Very cool. He was pictures on Facebook. Looked like an absolute rocker. It was awesome. Joe Becht, David Block, Augustine Garcia de Prades, Philip Edward Phyllis, and Brian Sager. Thank you all very much. Yeah, you know, funny thing, if anybody's interested, buy a book from me at martinpopoff.com, and I will throw in a set of my show notes. These things are just piling up here. So if you're interested, if you like my books, if there's something you're looking at there, and you were wondering what my notes look like, they're basically printed out notes of 4, 5, 6 pages kind of thing per episode. And yeah, I've been keeping them. So yeah, if you want to get a book and you're fans of this, what I'm doing here, and you want a set of show notes, I will stick in a show notes with any kind of book order. And the latest books are, you know, what do we got? The Rubber Plant, the Thin Lizzy. It's all at martinpopoff.com. Chronological order from the top. I sign them, send them out from the office here. PayPal buttons, all of that, blah, blah, blah. So there you go. Wow, this was a long episode. But you know what I'm going to say now, of course. For your homework, go play something. And absolutely, it is that Saints album. Man, I just love that album. We lost Chris Bailey. Man, that was terrible. But got to meet the guy at least when he came to Toronto this one time, rare time. Obviously, Australian band, they don't get here very often. But man, this Eternally Yours album is just a corker from start to finish. Smart, interesting, varied. And yeah, as I say, A Minor Version and Memories Are Made of This are wow. They do not fit, and boy, do they fit on the next one. So there you go. Go play some Saints.
Find all of our shows, notes, social, and links at www.pantheonpodcast.com or wherever you listen to great podcasts. All songs can be found for purchase on iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. Please purchase these great and important tracks. Find us on Facebook at the RNRAP. We are on Instagram at R&R Archaeology. Tweet us at R&R Archaeology.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.